Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I am your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic, which means I spent this Sunday, I'd like to say blissfully doing nothing. I had some work to do, and I'm recording a podcast, but the podcast is fun. The work was, I'm writing about football. It's not that bad. But we've got plenty to discuss because since the last podcast, we've got an injury news on Carson Wentz. We had some time to think about it, and I got a bunch of questions here from you, the listeners or the followers on Twitter, joining me here to break it all down. It's been a minute since we've had him on the podcast. It's the first time in this season, I do believe, because he's been busy, and I haven't checked in. He is the great Mike Smeltz. Mike, welcome back to the podcast. Needed to get your take on everything that's going 6 weeks in, but first and foremost, how are you?
I'm so thrilled to be here. For everyone who doesn't know, I just send Ben texts and Slacks all the time with conspiracy theories about what this team may be doing. And now I think it's fitting that I'm on an episode where we're soliciting from the fans' ideas because I am like them. I'm constantly thinking about this team and how they can maximize their window, whatever window that may be, whether it's closing. I mean, it's not opening. So I'm thrilled. Absolutely thrilled to be here, Ben.
Well, look, I appreciate it. You know, I wish I had answers for everybody, for yourself and others who ask questions, but I'm thrilled when you send me those questions or when people hit me up on Twitter at Ben Standing. You can hit up Mike with your theories. It's at Mike Smeltz, correct?
That's right, yeah.
All right, and if you want to
check- I will definitely talk back. I will communicate with you because I'm constantly thinking about this team. At all times, yeah.
And Mike is part of our narrative podcast department. I say part of. I think he basically is the department. And if you missed it, he did a great podcast right before the season started about Andrew Luck and kind of everything that went on with that. So if you haven't checked it out, I encourage you to do that. And it's somewhat pertinent to this team in the sense of, you know, obviously the Washington got Carson Wentz from the Colts, and the Colts have been on this journey to find a quarterback ever since Andrew Luck randomly retired. And, you know, they've been a much better team than Washington has. And they also don't have the, you know, their owner is interesting, but they don't have the constant, I like to say the constant ick factor that goes on around here. So Washington isn't the only team that's constantly in search of a quarterback, but they're the team that we talk about. It's been going on forever. And the Carson Wentz thing took another turn, since the game ended on Thursday night. Washington, of course, beat the Bears by half a yard or whatever that was at the very end of the game there. But quickly, so on Saturday morning, we heard, and I reported, as did others, that Carson Wentz suffered a fractured finger in the game. If you didn't see the highlight, there was one play where he threw a pass and his hand smacks the hand of a player, of one of the Bears defenders, but then it looks like he hits it on, I think, I want to say Charles Leno's helmet on the follow through. Wentz said after the game that he did hit a helmet. You could tell he was not in pretty comfortable we don't know what's going to happen. He's supposed to meet with a specialist Monday, so we'll know more about that. I don't want to guess too much. I would imagine it's conceivable to think he misses some time, but I don't know if that's one game or a month. I don't know. We'll find out more hopefully in the next day or so. So, Mike, you hear that news on top of everything else that's kind of going on with this team. What a crazy week this was for Carson Wentz and the organization. What when you heard that he had an injury on top of kind of everything else, what were you thinking?
Oh, you don't really want to know what I was thinking, Ben, because what I was thinking was, well, I don't want to be a downer. Obviously, fantastic win in Chicago. I mean, you know, great. What maybe one of the worst. I mean, it is the worst game in the Amazon Prime era, for sure, that Al Michaels has had to witness.
Wait, is that true? Are we saying that was worse than the game the week before? I'm not saying it wasn't, but the week before was 12-9 in overtime between two teams, like, you know, like Washington, Chicago, the bar was low just because the other game, Denver, I mean, you know, considered a, you know, Denver Indy was considered to be a pretty good matchup at the start of the year.
And I'll even that, like, obviously so many Commanders fans wanted Russell Wilson, right? Like, everyone was desperate for the hope that this Richmond native would want to come to DC, come back home and play for the Commanders. Honestly, Carson Wentz has been a better quarterback than Russell Wilson this season. I mean, it's not like a million times better, but he has been better. And can you imagine if this team had given Russell Wilson the contract that Russell Wilson got from the Broncos and he had played as poorly? Now, maybe it would be different. Anyways, well, yeah, like, I think
along those lines, like, I played this bit. I don't know if I did this on a podcast or not, but I was doing it somewhere. Maybe it was just in my head with Lenny. It was like, okay, here are your three options you can do at quarterback. You can stay with what you have with Carson Wentz. You've already given up the multiple day two draft picks, and you've taken on this contract. But after this year, no dead money. You can take Matt Ryan. It only cost a third round pick to get him, but he still has next year like $35 million. Or you can take Russell Wilson. You can think this starts an aberration, and you have him for like another, what, like 5 years or so, but with a crazy cost of an extension, as well as they gave up a bunch of first and second round picks to get him and some players. So you could look at it in a few different ways. How would you, which one would you, knowing what you know right now, which of those deals would you rather take from all the way from the start to now?
You know, even though I just kind of disparage Russell Wilson, I still like, he is by far the highest ceiling. He's been by far the better player of those three, even though Matt Ryan, of course, had an MVP season, and Russell has never, I don't think he's ever gotten an MVP vote. I think that's like the odd stat about him. He's like the Steve Carell of the NFL, where Steve Carell never won an Emmy for The Office, and Russell Wilson has never been voted once for MVP, or he's not, I know for a fact he's never won it. The funny thing is, we bring that up, and at the time when they traded for Carson Wentz, when the Commanders did, and they gave up all that they gave up, one of the positives of the trade was his contract, that it was the easiest in the NFL to get rid of after year one, because there's no guaranteed money, but he is tied to the team for an additional 2 years. If they want, let's say he was great and they wanted to keep him. The only thing is, though, you can't trumpet that fact if you're the team, if you're trading for this guy. You can't, Ron Rivera can't come out and say, hey, we gave up, you know, two seconds and a third for this guy. We're super excited. But by the way, if the team sucks and he sucks, we can cut him, right? Like, you can't,
right.
You can't factor that in as credit to the Commanders, because public, like, if they're thinking already, we're trading all these assets for him, but part of that benefit to us is that we can get rid of him after a year, then he was not the right person to trade for, if you were that lacking confidence. Now, we talked about this pre-show, and I'm going to ask you this now. Obviously, we had this gigantic story from ESPN come out. A lot of different elements, and it's some, if you're a Commanders fan, you knew a lot of what was in there and some things you didn't know. One of the things that I did not know was they reported, ESPN, that Dan Snyder pushed for the Carson Wentz trade. Now, I'll just say before you get, because you know more about this than I do, it's not that I don't think that's true, but I really do believe that, like, that Ron Rivera and the management team around him were fully on board. I don't think this was Mike Shanahan and RG3, where we understand after the fact that Dan Snyder was the one who was aggressively pushing to move up to get RG3. This wasn't Dwayne Haskins and Jay Gruden where Dan Snyder made the call from his yacht and picked Dwayne Haskins. I think it's possible that Ron Rivera, as he said, went to Dan and said, here's what we're looking at. And Snyder said something like, Wentz is the guy. But more meaning more of like that is his opinion. I ask you, though, you know this team way better than I do. You know the inner workings of this team better than I do. When you read that bit in the story, how did that ring to you?
Yeah, so I don't know how often you listen to his podcast or read his columns when he wrote them, but Bill Simmons had this thing called the Tyson Zone, where it became you could believe anything that anybody said about Mike Tyson because he had just reached a point of, sure, you know, the tattooed faces or just the random behavior. Like Dennis Rodman probably falls under that category as well. I think Dan Snyder falls under that category as well too, right? Could you, I mean, imagine any headline about anything, you'd be like, sure. I mean, especially if it sounds negative, right? It's easy to believe. And just, you know, and so I think when everybody reads it, they're like, of course that's the case. I mean, as you said, you know, you made the yacht, calling the pick from the yacht. That was essentially the Dwayne Haskins pick. And, you know, we don't need to go back through time, but, you know, anybody who's been aware of this team knows all the different times that Dan Snyder's put his, you know, thumb on the scale and said, no, we're going to go do this, even if his football people said otherwise. I'm not going to bet my house on this, but I don't believe that aspect of the report. I do believe this was a Ron Rivera call. Now, I thought that before Ron Rivera's rant the other night where he, you know, I've never seen somebody defend wanting a player who the majority of people think you shouldn't have gotten more than Ron Rivera did that day. And, you know, I don't know, still processing what to make of that rant, but I do ultimately believe that he was more in charge of that. I don't really think Dan Snyder has been involved a lot in the football side the way people were making it out to be in that story, which isn't to say that I'm saying he's been not involved. I'm just saying my sense is that this is not as the meddling owner that we've seen before, which isn't to say it's not going to happen going forward. I'm just saying to this point, I don't know that I buy that he was the one pushing for Wentz and everybody else just kind of went with it.
Yeah, I think the entire organization was desperate for a new quarterback. And Wentz was the guy that felt the most attainable, highest ceiling. Wentz never had a market. He wasn't like Matt Ryan. Like when Matt Ryan wanted to leave Atlanta after Atlanta pursued Deshaun Watson, Matt Ryan had enough cachet within that organization to say where he wanted to go. He wanted to go to Indy. So he ends up in Indy. Carson Wentz obviously had no power within the Indy organization to say, hey, I want to go to Kansas City to be a backup, right?
Or no,
whatever.
No,
yeah. He has no power to do so. So like Carson Wentz made sense on those levels. And I do believe Dan Snyder, like they probably did go to Dan Snyder and ask him what he thought because he's the owner of the team. But I really doubt that Dan Snyder was picking Carson Wentz because we know what quarterback, not to go too crazy here, but the quarterback that Dan Snyder probably, old school Dan Snyder would have won Deshaun Watson. He would have done what Jimmy Haslam did, the owner of the Browns, which is, again, I don't have reporting, but you know, whatever. But asserting control and to say, we're going to get this guy. We're going to do whatever we can to get this guy. Deshaun Watson was that guy. And thankfully he's not, because, you know, I don't want to go down this road, but you know, if he was on this team, how terrible that would be. But so you brought all the way back to bring it all the way back, the hand injury. Okay. You never root for injuries. Of course, you don't ever do that, but I will be honest. The first thing I thought of was the Commanders may have gotten an out for playing Carson Wentz enough, but not too much this season. Because the biggest thing I am tracking, unfortunately, the team is 2-4. Ron Rivera has had teams that have not been great early on that have grown throughout the season. The only difference is this year, you know, the Eagles are playing the Cowboys right now. The Giants had a massive win against the Ravens. It's tough to imagine the Commanders making a charge for the division. the Commanders, if they play Carson Wentz, I'm sure, I know you've talked about this, more than 70% of the snaps this season, they owe a second round pick to Indy, not a third. This hand injury does present a chance where, like, it's like, okay, he's out for a couple of games. Taylor Heinicke goes in there, and then he can come back and play the rest of the season. And it almost is like satisfies the ability of keeping your second round pick while also having Wentz as your starter. Right. Cause, but who knows? Like, I've done the Googling. Who knows how long he may be out, but a broken bone on your throwing hand, there's no way around that. There, you know, it's a fracture. I don't, you know, I'm not, again, I'm not an orthopedic, but it's not like, we've seen guys play with injuries if you're a quarterback when it's not your throwing arm or hand. If you can't, you know, I would imagine it's pretty tough to grip a football. So I would have to guess it would be multiple weeks. And if it's multiple weeks, it may drop below that 70 percentile snap percentage. And it kind of saves the Commanders a little bit in that frame. I know that there's also like a byproduct of that, but that is what I thought. I thought, oh, yay, they get to keep their second round pick. As I know that's so brutal, Ben.
No, look, I hear you. I mean, I wrote about the idea, like, you know, what if they lose to the Bears? Like, what's in play? And one of the aspects was the 70% situation for sure. I was talking about this with Michael Phillips the other day, and we were sort of guessing week 10, week 11. I mean, you never know, right? It's not like snaps are a definitive number each week. Some weeks it's 75, and some weeks it's like 60, and you don't know. But somewhere like week 10, week 11 was sort of the guess as to when 70% might happen. So, you know, he probably has to miss more than four games ultimately. But yes, to your point, this is potentially, if he's out for a bit, potentially a way to sort of have your cake and eat it too. If they want to keep him longer term, but don't want to give up the second rounder, this is a scenario that where that could unfold. Of course, you know, you still have to debate, would you even want to keep him long term? We don't need to, although I'm happy to hear what you think, but, like, you know, the whole thing when Ron Rivera says, you know, the one word answer of quarterback, which led to this whole, you know, thing about, oh, he's throwing Wentz under the bus. I'm still seeing people talk about that today as if it's a true thing. I don't believe that that's the case. I believe the answer he was trying to give about how, you know, they just haven't had time to build with a quarterback the way other teams in the division have is illogical, because, you know, Daniel Jones first year with a first year head coach, Dallas was playing a backup. Okay, all that aside, I think there's just so many fascinating questions. You mentioned before that Carson Wentz has arguably played better than Russell Wilson to this point. And here's the thing, right? For all the people who want to complain about the trade itself or the idea that he would be the quarterback next year, tell me what else they're going to do, because this is the rub. This is the rub you're seeing all around the league. So many teams don't have quarterbacks. Do you know what draft pick they're 2-4? Do you know what draft pick they would have right now, according to the Tankathon, if the season ended today? We're talking during the Sunday night game. So I guess hypothetically the Monday game could alter this, but do you know what pick they would have right now?
What is it, like 10?
The 11th pick. At yeah. 2-4, so much of the league is terrible this year.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, I don't know what, like, imagine any of the quarterbacks that could have gotten this offseason in reality, even Russell Wilson. Are any of them playing well? I mean, no.
No, I mean, Matt Ryan had a good game today. And the only reason why I know that, because I had to start him in fantasy. And that's right. How you may have an idea of how bad my fantasy team is. But yeah, pretty much all the quarterbacks that had changed teams and moved around had all been bad this year. If you want to include Baker Mayfield in that mix, you know, and we should, right? I mean, so many of these guys have played poorly this year. That's what's kind of funny, is we're so myopic in our view of the team, the Commanders, that's all we think about. But when you look around the NFL, it kind of like Mitch Trubisky, again, a guy who some people in the fan base really wanted over Carson Wentz. I mean, we talked about the value proposition of just signing Trubisky and keeping those picks. Trubisky was benched for Pickett. Now Pickett gets hurt in the game, and Trubisky comes back and actually plays pretty well. I know what you're talking about. The thing is, if they had lost, and they didn't lose to the Bears, but if they had lost to the Bears, it would have crystallized what the season should have been. this does give them a ray of hope if we're going to look positive. Like, again, I think we kind of know what this team is. It's not the worst team in the NFL, like they were veering towards, but it's also definitely not. It's going to be tough to compete for a wild card, and I'm trying to be nice about that. If they had lost to the Bears, then I think, I know you had Jay on to talk about Code Red. Like, you just shut it. You, like, it would be a shut it down situation. If you're 1-5, you shut it down. Now they have at least a chance to be like, okay, you see what happened to the Packers against the Jets. Now, I doubt I'm not going to do this whole thing where I'm going to go through the schedule and pick out the wins.
Well, I mean, but just remember, I mean, last year they were 2-6, then ripped off 4 in a row and were actually in the wild card. Like, if the season ended, then had a wild card spot at 6-6. And the year before they were 1-5, rallied to 7-9. Obviously the division was bad, but it wasn't good enough that year to win. So even, I think even in their head, even if they had lost to the Bears, I don't think that they'd be looking at this the way you and I would probably be, in a more logical way, that you need to look bigger picture and figure out how to get to the next step, not just crawl back to the middle, you know, which is sort of like what the Wizards do all the time and what these guys are kind of aiming to do. And all that is for sure. Now, here's the thing, though. Some people are listening to this and saying, hey, you guys are missing the point. They're not going backwards. They're going forwards because right. If Wentz is missing time, here comes Taylor Heinicke back into the mix. He would get to face Green Bay, his favorite team growing up, for the second year in a row. You know, we often sit here and say, you know, and I do, that Carson Wentz is an upgraded quarterback. I believe that to be so. We've seen some of the throws he's made. You know, he makes some great throws, but he's, you know, just limited in certain ways, pocket presence or whatever. But Heinicke last year, they went 7-8 with him, right? I mean, right now this team is tracking at, you know, 2-4. They're, you know, that's not gonna get there. So it's not like Heinicke can't get this team, you know, over the threshold. Not arguably, they should have beaten Green Bay last year if he doesn't do that slide at the goal line instead of getting into the end zone, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so all that said, Heinicke, if he were to play, is coming in. I think it's conceivable that Heinicke, I haven't thought about the Green Bay matchup yet, but I'm just saying, I'm not like that worried about them taking a drop off or like, oh, they have no chance. It's the longer term aspect that's like, well, Heinicke's not the answer. But in the near term, you know, I don't know that their chances of winning have decreased if he is playing. That would be my general assessment. But again, we haven't seen Heinicke play at all this year, so we'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, and it, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of attention on Scott Turner, right? Well, who knows his offense? Heinicke knows this offense better than anyone. So it's a real opportunity for Turner's offense to be run through a guy. I mean, this is the whole reason why Heinicke was here in the first place, is that he knew it better than anyone else. He knew it better than any other quarterback that had been there. That's why every time he comes in, he looks really good, at least initially. He's way more mobile at this point in his career than Wentz. It will be interesting to see. And, you know, this team is by beating Chicago, yes, they kind of go out of the tanking tier for now. You know, I was talking to a few of my buddies. You know, everyone's looking at mock drafts before that Chicago game thinking, okay, yeah. CJ Stroud, Will Levis, you know, Bryce Young, whoever you want, right? You get really excited for that possibility. Now you kind of, now you're the 11th pick in the draft. So you think a little bit about that less. But Heinicke, it's going to be intriguing. What we know about Taylor Heinicke, as you said, is that the guys like him a lot, right? Like, he's a galvanizing kind of presence on the field. And his mobility, his movement in the pocket, is really going to help the offensive line, because obviously Wentz was, what, the most sacked quarterback in the NFL, or one of the most sacked quarterbacks. And as anyone who's watched the game knows, that he partly leads to that problem himself. Heinicke's ability to move around back there and then to pick up yards going past the line of scrimmage with his legs, that's a real asset for this team. I will say that if you know, it's hard to like pick out the Carson Wentz things. The distinct thing Carson Wentz was just way better at the Taylor Heinicke, were the couple of those touchdown passes that he just, the one I'm thinking about to was a Terry McLaurin in week 1,
yeah,
where he dropped it like 30 yards down the field along the sideline between two defenders and Terry ran for a touchdown. Taylor can't make that throw. There's throws that Wentz makes, and the whole reason why he's the starter, that Heinicke can't. But there's a lot of elements that Heinicke does well that Wentz at this point in his career, because of his legs, just can't do. It's going to be interesting. And like, so we're going to see how many weeks, if Wentz is out, I imagine it will be something, how many weeks that's going to be. You look at the schedule, you see what can happen. You know, this injury is either going to mean that Taylor Heinicke retakes control of the quarterback position if they go in a streak, or if they lose some games, well, then they maybe goes a whole different direction. And then it goes, oh, like if they lose all the Heinicke games, and then it goes, okay, this season's over. Let's put Sam Howell in there. Let's see what he is, right? And we will see Sam Howell dress. And the way Taylor Heinicke plays, it's not out of the question that Sam Howell's probably going to get some snaps, because Heinicke is reckless on the field. It's a whole experiment. Every year with this team, it's an experiment about how to run a professional football team. And we'll see what happens when they play Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, you know.
And Green Bay looked terrible today. That was one of the local games on TV here. And they lost to the Jets in 27-10, and they just looked like they had nothing. They couldn't get the ball down the field. Their offensive line was a mess. I tweeted at one point, it was a gif of Homer Simpson sort of salivating. And I said, like, this is basically what Montez Sweat, John Allen, and Daron Payne are thinking watching this offensive line. So I'm not predicting that Washington will win. I'm just saying Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay do not look like the world beaters that we all generally assume them to be. But yeah, I mean, the Heinicke situation is going to be really fascinating. And, you know, to the point of Rivera saying the other day that when he said quarterback, that he meant the other teams, even like Cooper Rush, he's been in their system for a while. He knows what they're doing. That helps. Okay. Well, like you said, there's nobody who knows what Scott Turner wants to do more than Taylor Heinicke. So if that's what's holding them back, then that shouldn't be the problem anymore. He obviously has played just with Washington alone, you know, for a bit at the end of 2020 and then all last year. So, you know, to an extent you could argue, or at least they might, maybe should, that they will be a little smoother operation. That said, you know, we don't know if Jahan Dotson will be back. I still presume Sam Cosmi's out at least a couple of weeks. We'll see if Logan Thomas is able to come back. So they're missing some pieces on that end. There's obviously the saga with William Jackson on the other side of the field. So, you know, they're hardly out of the woods, even beyond the quarterback. But at the same point, it's interesting to see what happens if Heinicke is actually the quarterback. Just to be clear, normally Monday is the day we hear from the coach after a game. We obviously talked to him on Friday. We will not hear from Rivera until Tuesday this week. And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the team will be available to us. So just keep that in mind if you're wondering when we'll hear from Rivera next on any of these topics. We can get to some of these questions. Did you have any other, or did you have one did you want to do a lead off with, or any topic to get into that we didn't before we get to the questions?
Well, I think my one question for you is, let's say they had lost that Bears game. I know this is stupid to even ask, but do you think they would have gone with Sam Howell instead of Heinicke if they were 1-5? Because I do know what Taylor Heinicke is, and he will keep the season alive. But I, of course, am, like every other Commanders fan, interested to see what Sam Howell's going to do if he actually plays real football. There's no question it's going to be Heinicke, right? I mean,
From what I was told, Heinicke is the answer. He'll be the guy. My take before the season started was, if Wentz were to get hurt before, say, the first half of the year, or during the first half of the year, I should say, that Heinicke would be the answer. The question I would have would be, if it's later in the year, where is Sam Howell with his development? Because, you know, he's got the Taylor Heinicke moxie with a bigger arm and sort of a more, and a slightly bigger build, okay? And, you know, he runs a ton himself. So all that would be interesting. But obviously, it's a much more unknown variable, which can go either way. Maybe he's playing like the way Bailey Zappi is for the Patriots right now, which is, you know, a big kind of surprise. On the other hand, you know, a lot of rookies typically slow starts, even if they're first round picks. So I do think we see Sam Howell at some point if the season goes, you know, by the wayside and all that kind of stuff. And just, even if Wentz were to say miss no time, right? I think that's going to be obviously a huge question. Do they at some point say we're going to go to Sam Howell or even whatever? Just we're not going to use Wentz because of the 70% thing. But if you do that, you're basically saying we're not really buying into you being our guy next year. Or do they lean in and say, no, we still think he's our best option, therefore we're just going to keep playing him? I think that will be a very interesting moment in time should it come to that, i.e. they completely fall out of the picture.
Yeah, I would support Dan getting off the yacht. I know he's off the yacht, but I would support him getting off the yacht if this team was like 3-11 and they still wanted to play Wentz at the end of the year and they don't care about that pick being a second rounder or a third rounder. Because if they're, you know, a high second round pick is ultra valuable. So I would rather Dan Snyder actually insert himself in that situation. I'll make one note. You know, like we talk about Turner and there's a lot of heat on Turner right now. It's just so funny if you look across the NFL, guys that we think are offensive geniuses, like Sean McVay, Cliff Kingsbury. I don't know if people think Cliff Kingsbury is a genius, but he's presented as such. There's a lot of coaches and play callers that are thought to be ultra high level. Kyle Shanahan and Matt Patricia's outscoring all of them with his offense in New England. So like as much as we know that Shanahan and McVay and maybe Cliff's scheme are great, their teams aren't putting up points like they used to. And so I have my problems with Turner, but I also don't know if it's like, there's a lot of factors that are going into that, like offensive line and wins. So I just wanted to put that out there.
And I was going to say, like, I really do think you mentioned the Rams.
I did the Cardinals because
they
put up 9 points today.
Yeah.
Seattle, a defense that's horrible.
No, yeah. And Green Bay to some degree with Matt LaFleur, even the 49ers to the extent that I think we tend to focus on the quarterbacks. Offensive line play just seems like it's a mess. You're just seeing over and over again, at least what I'm watching, and maybe it's mostly I'm watching Carson Wentz, but regardless, just seeing quarterbacks constantly under heat. And, you know, offensive line play, I don't think is what it was. We talked about this in a previous podcast about, you know, how much is it of people playing in the spread offense? I think I actually talked about this with Robert Mays when he was on last week about, you know, with these linemen playing in spread offenses in college, is that making them less prepared for the NFL? And we know here specifically, you know, again, you know, they moved on from Brandon Scherff and Eric Flowers. They bring in Andrew Norwell and Trey Turner. Norwell actually had a pretty decent game this week, so let's give him some credit for that. But obviously Trey Turner has been benched and he's not right. Sam Cosmi's been off to a slow start. So the offensive line play, I mean, I have always said I'm investing in the offensive line. Other than quarterback, that to me is like probably going to be my biggest investment, maybe defensive line, just as a unit. And they have got to do that next year. We'll have more time to discuss that, but they have got to get back to investing in that group in ways they really haven't done here in the last couple of years. We'll see about that. By the way, I think Cornelius Lucas had a pretty solid game the other day. PFF gave him their highest ranking for any of Washington's offensive players, for whatever that's worth. And I do think it'll be interesting. I think one of the questions in here was, is there any talk about moving Cosmi to guard and Lucas to tackle? And whenever Cosmi comes back, and I wrote at some point within the last couple of weeks that to me, if you're going to put your five best guys out there, I think it's arguably Cosmi and Lucas together on the right side. The question is, are they willing to do that? And perhaps saying Cosmi's not our ultimate long-term right tackle because some people think he's better at guard. I do think that's an interesting wonder here, because if the goal is to win, if they're focused on winning now, regardless of what you or I might think, when the time comes for Cosmi to come back, is that the move to make? But we'll have time for that because I doubt he's back this week.
Yeah, I am pro moving him to guard if you think it can, if the coaches think it can work. Because I think what's holding him at right tackle is the fact that when they drafted him in the second round. So the draft place holds him to the spot of where they're like, we drafted him as a tackle. We drafted him with a high pick, and we're going to invest in him because we think, you know, getting a tackle, a right tackle in the second round is really good value. When he was promising his rookie year, but ultimately, you know, he had injuries and all that stuff. This year, he hasn't been all that great. And it's not like the Trent, remember the Trent Williams, Ty Nsekhe situation where particularly Chris Cooley and Sheehan would talk about it a lot of like, should they move Trent into guard and put Ty Nsekhe as left tackle, and you have Morgan Moses and Brandon Scherff and whoever was center at that point. I don't even know who was the center at that point, but it's a little different. Like Cosme, if he's an amazing right guard and you got him with the second round pick, fantastic. Lucas has always been good. He's always seemed to be pretty good in there. And this team could use, ever since Scherff left, they could use guard help. So, like, Rivera talks about position flex. So let's see that in action. Like, if it ends up this is the best system for the guy, for the team to have Cosme move into guard, try it out. Can't be much worse than what's happening on a consistent basis in the interior of the offensive line right now for the Commanders. Cause that really is the issue. And you talk about investment and it's like, you know, I think that what happened, we're able to pull like Charles Leno and other people like that kind of off the scrap heap, right? And turn them into pretty good players. Eric Flowers, right? Turn them into serviceable players. And that made them believe that they could just keep doing.
All right, let me run through a couple questions here before I let Mike get back to his busy life of being a dad and podcaster. One question here from at Strife Chamber on Twitter. Basically, I don't have it in front of me right now, but the basic question was, after we saw Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson, how they performed against the Bears, are we going to come to the realization that essentially Gibson should be the lead back and Brian Robinson more of the hammer? So, you know, so instead of it being where Gibson's like sort of the second guy, should it be the other way? What's your basic take on that? And then I'll chime in.
I still think like you got to give Robinson a little bit more time. You know, he was shot in the leg and he came back from that rather quickly. He's a power back. I think he identifies the hole better than Gibson does. I like Antonio Gibson better when it's less relied upon him all the time. If he can pop, if they can put him in the backfield. I mean, I guess we talk about battering ram versus feature back. I still like Robinson getting, you know, like I think this team, the chance to success for this team is to find the magic that they had last season when they were running the ball with Gibson a ton and being successful at it and controlling the clock. I think they can do that even better with Robinson and still mix in Antonio Gibson. I just like how Robinson runs. He's just a big old dude and can make things happen. So
right.
I love both of them going forward in the roles.
I mean, obviously this was not a great, offensive game, so it's hard to say that like, well, the offense looked better with one versus the other. Robinson, I mean, I thought Gibson did have some really crisp runs there in the second half, but I've been saying this all along, I think what Robinson gives you mentioned better at finding the holes, this sort of steadier production. Maybe it's, you know, he's not breaking off 30-40 yarders all the time, but like it's a steadier growth, and I still think that's the answer. I think the question maybe they need to lean into or wonder about more is, we talk so much about Terry McLaurin and Curtis Samuel and Jahan Dotson, but do they need to say, we're going to be just more run oriented, bottom line, and we're going to lean into that, control the clock, and then just have Wentz be the play action guy and just look for him to go down the field, but play in, play out, we're going to be more of the run, more run heavy. I think if, in terms of this year, I think that's something they need to consider. But no, I would leave it sort of in the same way that they had it with Robinson as the lead and Gibson as the change of pacey kind of a guy. Here's my fun tinfoil hat thought though for you, Mike. The trade deadline's coming up, November 1st. And typically we're talking about, obviously, now like a William Jackson because of that whole situation that's going on, or Deron Payne because of his contract, or whatever. I'm watching some of these games today, right? And for example, the Buffalo-Kansas City game. Here we go. Have two teams, big, you know, they're the favorites basically to win the Super Bowl, and yet neither of those teams has much of a running game, like, at all. Wouldn't Antonio Gibson look amazing for one of those teams? And before you say, well, why should Washington get rid of him? Well, that's the thing, right? They have almost too many guys, because you have Robinson, you have Gibson, but you also still have McKissick. I'm not even getting into if Jonathan Williams or Jared Patterson are helpful. Plus, you still have all the receivers, and Curtis Samuel can get some carries. To me, this is a potential forward-thinking move. If you traded Antonio Gibson, and I'm not, you know, running backs, typically you're not getting a lot back. So I don't want to sit here and say they could get a third. I don't know. But if you could get what you think is good value for him, are you really losing that much while simultaneously helping your cause going forward? To me, this is the type of thing, whether you do it or not, I'd like to think they're thinking about it, because they clearly see Robinson as the lead. And like I said, even if you traded Gibson, you still have McKissick to do the change of pace, pass catching kind of stuff. So again, I'm not, this is not reporting. I'm not, this is not sourcing. This is just my tinfoil hat watching some of these games today and thinking, boy, this is one spot where they actually seem to have some depth, maybe take advantage of it and see what you can get.
I think it would be a smart move. I don't think Rivera and co do it because of how desperate, like, I think that outburst after the Bears game was partly out of desperation in terms of, they're feeling, he's been feeling the pressure. I mean, he himself all year into preseason and all into the season, it talked about raising expectations, how this is a big year and all that stuff. The year hasn't gone that great so far. And part of the problem of having a coach-centric organization, coach-centric organizations typically, and Rivera's been pretty good about this, but typically focus on the present versus the future. And that can lean into, if you could get a fourth or fifth round pick for Antonio Gibson, organizationally, you should do that, because there's real value in getting that pick. But if you're a team that's trying to fight for your job or fight for your place in the league, you want every available current asset you can. Deron Payne's another name, and we've talked about Deron Payne a million times. Now, that there's like the compensation pick versus the present day pick, and what would that be? And you could get a fourth rounder now, but it would be potentially a third rounder in 2020. What year is it? 2024, with the compensatory pick would come out. But this team, this coaching staff, this organization is desperate to win as many games as possible, because they feel like they have to show continued improvement. They can't take like a leap backwards and then a big jump forward. They have to keep stepping forward, keep progressing. So I love the thinking, and I do think it would make a lot of sense to just, because McKissick is great. I think every time he's in the game, he makes a play. He's so skilled at catching the ball in the backfield. He's so skilled at getting first downs. But I think this organization is going to be very present-minded, and that includes not trading guys at the deadline.
Right, and this is the thing, right, when you talk about why the coach and the GM should be separate people, because both of those jobs have different visions. And Rivera, you know, by and large, he's a guy that's going to want to win now. I mean, even if they were to lose the next couple games, I doubt he's going to say, all right, let's start moving towards the future. It just doesn't seem like that kind of a thinker. So, yeah, you know, whatever. I mean, like I said, I'm not suggesting Antonio Gibson should get traded. Same with Deron Payne. But, like, you have to make a call here at some point. Where are you as an organization? Again, I point to the Wizards always, you know, in a year and within the NBA in which, like, the greatest prospect to come out since, I don't know if it's LeBron James or Kevin Durant or whomever is there. And then there's like one, maybe two other guys who are really, really interesting. And a lot of teams are saying, screw it, we're just going to go all in for the ping pong balls. And the Wizards are saying, no, we'll be good. We're going to get in the playoffs, but like the 7-8 seed or the play-in game. And that's not going to ultimately long-term, you have to get lucky with the draft, because ultimately that's just not going to work. And this is where the Commanders find themselves as well. And by the way, you know, if we're talking about the quarterback thing, if they do move on from Carson Wentz, you know, again, you're not, I don't know, you're going to get any star players, star quarterbacks to want to come play here. That leaves you with the draft. And as we typically know, the further you are away from the number one overall pick, the worse your options are going to be at quarterback. So, you know, ultimately that to me should be the bigger play than the short-term thinking, but they typically are a short-term thinking kind of a bunch here. You've got the questions as well. Is there anyone here that rings to you that you want to get into, or you got one of your own that we haven't addressed yet? We could talk about things beyond quarterback or the trade deadline.
Well, the one big question is from the real Pat Doyle, which is, and this was, he says, does yesterday feel like a turning point? So he's probably tweeting this out on Thursday or Friday. Does yesterday feel like a turning point for Dan potentially being forced out, or just more noise? And he points out, he says, both the ESPN article and Al Michaels saying on the Amazon broadcast what he said, which is essentially what the league would want is for Dan to sell, right? Ben, I'll let you answer that.
Well, it is interesting, it was a turning right? point? Well, I mean, like, we spent all that day, when I lamented this the other day, that like 6 in the morning, I woke up in Chicago and the story was online and the day just kind of went from there. And I'm not saying the story didn't have some interesting things. We had one of the authors of that story, Seth Wickersham, on the podcast the other day, and there were some interesting details for sure, particularly about Jerry Jones perhaps losing some allegiance to Dan Snyder, although he came out subsequently on his radio appearance that he makes every week and kind of pushed back on that. But that aside, I actually think if you want to get excited, if you want to believe that the Dan Snyder thing is getting closer, I actually do think Al Michaels' comment was the bigger deal, because that guy in that role is typically not going to make sort of a splashy comment like that. And I've saw some notion that, hey, Al Michaels has been obviously doing this forever, that he's, you know, he knows everybody everywhere. And that if he's saying that to that degree, that somebody maybe sort of said to him, hey, don't be shy if you want to go that route. So I actually thought that was more interesting. You know, you mentioned before we talked about the Dan Snyder want Carson Wentz or not, you know, that's the type of thing that's in the story, but like, I kind of, like I said, don't really know if I think that's accurate. And there were a couple other things that I'm just like, I don't really know if I'm buying this. And it's one of the things that happens. I'm not saying that their reporting is wrong. Somebody told them these things. It's just because somebody told them something doesn't mean it's true. But Al Michaels saying what he said to me is like, oh, okay. That is kind of intriguing. I would ultimately say that, no, answer the question, I don't think, I mean, I don't know what closer means. The ball getting moved from the 23 to the 26 yard line, maybe. But like, in terms of like crossing midfield or moving towards the red zone to him getting out, I don't see that. As we know, though, the owner's meeting is on Tuesday, and we're still waiting for the multiple reports to come out, the Mary Jo White investigation for the league, Congress's, whatever they're going to reveal along with the transcript from Dan Snyder. So those are things to consider. But what I think is that, unfortunately, we were having some technical problems. So I had to let Mike go. Wasn't his issue at all. But so I'll just sort of wrap it up from here. I know people have also been wondering, when are we going to hear anything from Congress, from the NFL regarding these investigations? All I can tell you is that I check often, and I'm always sort of told not yet, maybe soon. I would imagine, particularly with Congress, that, you know, again, we're already at October 16th. Even if the House Democrats lose control of the House, they still would have it until January, right? Until the next, swearing in. But if you're going to use it for any political gains, you got to pull it out sooner than later. So my sense would be, I don't want to say soon, meaning 3 days, a week, I don't know, but not forever from now. I think relatively soon. I would think the same thing with the NFL, but again, we'll have to see on that one. There is an owners meeting again Tuesday. You know, even if they don't put voting for Dan Snyder on the agenda, no doubt there will be conversations about it. And perhaps from those conversations, there's an urgency to put out whatever is in that report, but we'll have to see on that front. Lastly, I did talk about the William Jackson thing. the other day that William Jackson, there was a report from the NFL Network that William Jackson has demanded a trade, seeking to join a team that has a system better suited to his situation. And as I mentioned the other day, I got sort of mixed comments back from people regarding that report. One person went so far as to say he did not request a trade. All that said, you know, I think their secondary did a better job last week. And, you know, if you said, I got to pick, will William Jackson play for this team again outside of injuries or not? I probably would lean towards not. Here's the thing, though, right? I mean, because of that salary, because, you know, he's got a huge cap hit and this year and money owed and all that, even if another team is willing to take him on, we're really not talking about getting much. So even though he is, you know, still considered probably be a pretty good cornerback in the right situation, which it does not appear this is, this is not going to be some huge result for them, other than maybe it just makes sense to move on, but that's a separate issue. We've talked about this one already. That is clearly a move that has not worked out. And, you know, hopefully they sit down and contemplate why it hasn't worked out next time they make a big move. All right. That is it for now, though. As I said, the Commanders will be back in action on Tuesday, or at least that's when Ron Rivera will speak with us. So maybe we'll get some updates then on Carson Wentz. We may hear about Carson Wentz by Monday because of the fact that he's meeting with a specialist on Monday. But we may hear about that. With Jahan Dotson, Logan Thomas, and others, we will see when they are back as well. But for now, that is it. Ben Standig signing off. Thanks to Mike Smeltz for his time. Until next time, see ya.